This is Radio Boston. I'm Adam Ragusea.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The New Hampshire presidential primary may be months away, but political activity in the state is picking up. And we're beginning an occasional series of interviews with the Republican contenders for the White House. Today, we are joined by former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. Mr. Gingrich was, of course, a congressman from Georgia when he became House Speaker in 1994, a position he resigned from in 1998. He is now back on the campaign trail and joins us today from Manchester, New Hampshire. Mr. Gingrich, welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, listen, it's great talking to you, and I'm very much looking forward to a chance to meet with folks once again. We're going to do something very exciting tomorrow. We're going to be at the production facility of Freudenberg NOK Sealing Technologies in Manchester. And it's very important because they use some management techniques that enable them to compete in the world market, that make them more productive, more efficient, and enable them to really be dramatically more effective. And we are working with some people called Strong America Now to apply that model to the federal government, where they believe it could solve up to $500 billion a year in savings.
And I understand that you support that model of operational efficiency that's been used in manufacturing because, I mean, as you've recently said, you think the Congressional Supercommittee charged with cutting the deficit by $1 trillion is, quote, I mean, about as dumb an idea as Washington has come up with in your lifetime.
I think that's right. I mean, take just the basic model. There are 535 senators and House members. They're now reduced to 12, so 97% of the people in the United States do not have representation on this committee. Your congressmen, your senators have been reduced to lobbying the committee. Second, there are 217 committees and subcommittees in the House and Senate combined, yet all of these standing committees with standing staffs who spent years studying these issues, they somehow aren't smart enough to do this. So we're consolidating from 217 committees and subcommittees to one, and somehow in the next 3 months they're going to come up with some magic solution. And you know what's going to happen. At the last minute, they'll come up with a really bad idea. They will rush it in without anybody understanding it, and they will basically, it's the equivalent of saying to you, would you rather have us cut off your right leg or shoot you in the head?
A choice that no one really wants to make, and I understand that you're advocating there are other ways. Let me ask you about the state that you're in today, about New Hampshire. I mean, there was a recent poll there released by the New Hampshire Journal that found that amongst New Hampshire likely primary voters, you seem to have the highest unfavorable rating, some 60% unfavorable. Is that something that worries you in terms of your chances in the Granite State?
Well, sure. It worries me in the sense that if I were the person that the elite media spent June and July describing, I wouldn't vote for me either. You know, and if you go back and look at all the different things that were said, all the attacks that were made, everybody who said Gingrich's campaign is dead, Gingrich doesn't have a chance. Well, you know, if you get a steady barrage of that for 60 days, and it should make people wonder, why was the Washington establishment so eager for me not to be in the race? And what we've discovered is that starting with the Ames debate, all of a sudden people looked up and said, gee, that guy's really making sense. And the first glimmerings of that, frankly, were in New Hampshire when we did the debate in New Hampshire and people, the CNN debate, and people said, with WMUR, people said, you know, well, he's different than I thought he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as we continue to work on this, as people see that I'm committed to real solutions, I'm committed to real developments, then I think you're going to have a continued improvement in what we're doing. I should say, by the way, that I'm not in New Hampshire yet today. I'm coming up first thing in the morning. I'm actually going through my home looking for earthquake damage. We had, as you know, an earthquake in Washington yesterday.
Oh, I hope all is well for you and your home down there. Mr. Gingrich, if I might ask you, I mean, you touched upon the fact that the media has been covering the troubles that your campaign has had over the course of the summer. I mean, there was the departure of your senior staff earlier in the summer. You came in eighth in the straw poll in Iowa. I believe I'm seeing that your second quarter campaign filings show that you're $1 million in debt and only have $300,000 cash on hand. That's according to Politico. I guess the question that much of the media and maybe many voters are asking is, why are you still in the race and how long do you plan on staying in?
Well, first of all, I'm in the race because I think this country's in real trouble, and I think we need big solutions. And I think as you watch the debates and as you look at what we're doing, and just take what we're doing tomorrow in Manchester, I think I'm the one candidate who has consistently said there are ways to reshape the federal government that can save at least $500 billion a year without cutting Medicaid, without cutting Medicare, without touching Social Security. And why aren't we demanding that Washington be smart enough to do what local companies have been doing for the last 25 or 30 years?
But and at so the same time, forgive me for interrupting, Mr. Gingrich, but at the same time, in the New Hampshire CNN MUR debate that you mentioned, I mean, there was the question that was asked that would you, the candidates, agree to a $1 increase in tax revenue for every $10 of deficit cutting? And nobody said yes. You agreed with them that you would not increase taxes in any way, shape, or form. I mean, is that not sort of limiting the possibilities for getting the United States out of its deficit problem?
No, because the fact is, in my lifetime, every time we've had a tax increase, in 1982, Ronald Reagan signed one tax increase and said in his diary and said in his memoirs, it was the biggest mistake of his presidency, because what you get out of liberals is a permanent tax increase and a promise to make cuts which never quite occur. And so I would argue that when we balance the federal budget, and this is one of the reasons I'm still in the race, I'm the only person running who's actually helped balance the federal budget for four straight years, and I helped organize that entire effort. We cut taxes to increase economic growth. Unemployment dropped to 4.2% while I was Speaker. Now, if we were at 4.2% unemployment today, our deficit would be dramatically smaller. So my interest is, how do I cut taxes to create jobs, to put people to work, to get them off food stamps, get them off Medicaid, get them off welfare, get them off unemployment? If I can do that, I shrink federal spending dramatically, and I increase the tax revenue of the United States.
Well, that is former Speaker of the House. I'm so sorry, Mr. Gingrich. We're just literally out of time, but that is former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. He is a presidential contender for the Republican Party, and he will be in Manchester, New Hampshire tomorrow. Mr. Gingrich, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Boston.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from theangle@boston.com. I'm Adam Ragusea.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.